that. Hello, everybody. Good evening. Thank you for coming on this beautiful Friday evening. My name is Talia Boyd. I'm the Western New Mexico Program Director for Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. I've been working in McKinley and Cibola counties for about 5 years now, and working around uranium legacy issues. So I've been working closely with various communities like Acoma and Church Rock and Crown Point area. And so tonight I wanted to bring our community together to kind of get an update on our local efforts as far as cleanup of the pollution with uranium mines in our area. And I brought some great local community people who have been working on the issues for a very long time. Our first guest speaker is Mr. Larry King, and he's with the Eastern Navajo Diné Against Uranium Mining, and they're based out of Crown Point. So tonight, Larry's gonna talk a little bit about some of the heavy lifting that NDOM has done in the past. They were a key player in a lot of heavy moving pieces that occurred. So I wanna give the mic over to Larry. He's gonna share his story. We were supposed to have Mr. Eric Jantz from the New Mexico Environmental Law Center here. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to attend this evening. So we kind of have a different list of guest speakers. We're supposed to have Teddy Nez from the Navajo Birth Cohort here as well. We also have Anna Rondon, the Executive Director from the New Mexico Social Justice and Equity Institute, who will also be speaking. And they're also co-sponsors of this event, just FYI. And just a little bit about CVNMEF. We're a nonprofit organization. We're based out of Santa Fe, but we have offices in Albuquerque, and I have a home office here in Gallup. So I'm based here in Gallup. I grew up in Gallup. I graduated from Gallup High. So I'm originally from Tuba, Arizona. So I like to say I'm half New Mexican now. So that's just a little bit about me, but I'm going to go ahead and pass the mic over to Larry, and Larry's going to kick us off.
Good evening. My name is Larry King, and I live 7 miles north of Church Rock, right off New Mexico State Road 566, adjacent to the old UNC Northeast Church Rock Mine 2. Or is, if you guys are familiar with the last mining company that wanted to do an ISL mining HRI property. I lived there all my life, except for a few years, 2 or 3 years, when I went to down to Flagstaff to follow my career in the government, and came back and have been here since. But I used to work at UNC from September 1975 to April of 1983. I started off as a surface laborer for 1 year, October 75 to October 76. And from the following year, I went underground as an underground ore prober with the geology department for exactly another year. From there, I transferred to the engineering department at the mine and was there for 5 years as an underground surveyor. So I've been, as an underground surveyor, I worked with the underground miners, usually right behind them, taking measurements on their advancement in the tunnels, on their blasting, recorded everything, because the miners got paid by the footage. So that was part of my duty every 2 weeks on a Friday to go before the day shift. Day shift starts at 8 to 4:30, so I used to get down there before 6 and take all the measurements and get back on surface about before noon and turn in my measurements. And from there, I think it went to the payroll, and that's how the payroll prepared the checks for the miners. But on this particular day, July 16, 1979, it was on a Friday. I went to work as usual. I drove probably by, every 2 weeks I went to work at 6 to 2 to beat the morning shift. So I went usually by going by there about 5 o'clock, and didn't pay attention, half asleep, went to the mine, changed my clothes, and went underground. It was the 8 o'clock morning shift that started coming in, and I started hearing the workers talking amongst themselves about did you see the dam? Did you see that big hole in the dam? I didn't know what they were talking about. But it was later when I got off work about between two and three, driving back down, and I looked towards the tailings pond, and that's when I noticed that the dam had broke. I understand it was in the early mornings, about four or five in the morning. But prior to that, I remember I don't really remember a week, 2 weeks, maybe even a month before that. I'm not sure, but I recall being taken to the tailings pond by my supervisor and others from my department, and we checked. We were checking the top of the dam, but the supervisors were talking amongst themselves at a distance, and I noticed that there was huge cracks about the width of these floor tiles here, several of them, and some of them were just, you couldn't see the bottom of the cracks. It was just pitch black down. So, but I didn't really do anything. The supervisors just talked amongst themselves, and we just went back to the office at the mine site. And lo and behold, that's where I noticed the cracks, that's where the dam had broke. July 16, 1979, which happened about 2.5 months after the Three Mile Island nuclear accident up in the east. This spill released over 1,100 tons of radioactive meal waste and over 90 million gallons of contaminated liquid. Through the unnamed wash, which met up with the Perco wash. The Perco wash goes right through the center Gallup here, on down to Sanders, and on down to Winslow. I've heard the spill reach the Little Colorado River in Arizona. But I always say that the contamination started way back before that. UNC sunk their shaft and started their underground activity in 1968. And they had to dewater the mine shaft, the working levels, and the water, the liquid, were pumped up to the surface. And on the surface were two... I just got started. Now I lost my track. My train of thoughts. But the surface had two unlined ponds, and that's where the mine water was pumping to, and eventually released through this small community of the Redwater Pond Road community. At the time, there was 14 residents, and each residence probably more than six household members in each. Little did the community know that that water was untreated, but it started in 1968 when the mines were sunk, and they started dewatering the mine, and the water was being released through the Perco wash, and it was already contaminated coming through here, all the way up to 1993 when the pumps, or 1995 when the when the pumps were shut off in the shaft, and that's when the water stopped being pumped into service, and that's when it stopped. So it was that many years that the UNC was releasing contaminated water into the Perco wash. And I always wondered why city folks in the town of Gallup never really voiced their concerns about all this contamination that was flowing through the city for many, many, many years. It's just the native communities on the outside that have raised concerns. And I've talked with a lot of people because my job used to take me through the community of Manalito, Lupton, and Hauk and Sanders. And over the years, I used to talk with a lot of tribal members down west of us, and they used to tell me the same devastation that my community, my relatives, Redwater Pond community, and all along that the devastation that we've experienced. Animals being deformed, and the same thing happened to the west. People have voiced their concerns, but nothing ever happened of that. In 2003, with Church Rock, at the time we had officials that were listening to our concerns up in my community, up in my area, and the Redwater Pond. So with the with Church Rock chapter, at that time we had different officials taking the lead and being partnered with Southwest Research and Information Center, Shrick from Albuquerque. A grant was issued to the chapter, and it was called CRUMP, Church Rock Uranium Monitoring Project. And with this money that came out of DC, we used it to survey the air, the water, and the land from Church Rock all the way to UNC and also into Redwater Pond community and up to the gates of Kerr McGee. That was in the fall of 2003. And with the results that came out, a lot of this information, I understand, is available on SRIC.com, I believe, or .org. The information from the survey, CRUMP. But the results were very alarming. Right across from where I live, 7 miles north of Church Rock, there was also another mine shaft, the first mine shaft in the community. Phillips Petroleum sunk a shaft and operated a small uranium mine from 1960 to 1962. 7 miles north of Church Rock, if you have been up in that area, it's over on the west side of the highway. And just right across the street on the east side is where I live. And that's my grazing permitted area. And right now, that area is abandoned. UNC reopened that mine from 1977 to 1983. And when the spill happened, UNC never recovered from that devastation. So eventually the mine, April of 1982 was the huge layoff that happened, the first of many more to come after that. That's when the huge layoff happened at UNC. I was fortunate enough to be one of those that did not get laid off at that time. I was transferred over to the mill site for another year, so I was finally laid off in April of 1983. But at the time that we were hired, we were never informed of how uranium, being exposed to uranium, radioactive material, would devastate our life in the years to come. I'm experiencing that problems nowadays, and I know a lot of my relatives up at Redwater Pond are also experiencing some of the effects of being exposed to radioactive materials. So So that mill's, the small mine and the shaft was dismantled after 1983 across the street from me. And then another, from 1985 to, I believe it was 1995, is when the reclamation UNC property was performed. There's another gentleman that usually tells us of all the things that UNC tried to hide, all the contaminated materials that were coming up from underground, materials that they were not able to be contaminated. They were buried in pits at the mill site in the holding ponds, eventually covered up. And now when you drive by the mill site, it just seems like a nice flat, flat grazing area. But those used to be six big mills, holding ponds for about, it stretched about maybe a quarter to half a mile long on the east side of the of State Road 566. But a lot of materials were buried there, according to the, eventually pictures came out. I've seen pictures, Polaroid pictures of what this particular person was trying to tell us over the years. He said he tried to report it to NRC, EPA, on what how UNC was taking shortcuts and getting rid of their materials. Some of the materials, I understand, were donated to other tribal communities without being informed to the community that they might be contaminated. So that's what UNC did at the time. And then from 1992 to, I believe it's last year, HRI, another uranium company, wanted to do an ISL mining, in situ leach mining in the area. It was a company from South Texas. The parent company is Hydro Resource Incorporated that did ISL mining in South Texas. It's an injection well that where they inject high pressure water with contamination with other sorts of metal, and practically it's almost similar to fracking. It's a deliberate contamination of underground aquifers. We've even had three families coming out from that came out of South Texas to try to inform and warn our community that this company will just take what they want and leave the devastation, the legacy to the communities. But we fought tooth and nail against this company, HRI. That's how NDOM was formed back in 1994, I believe. But I joined NDOM in 1997 in January because HRI had gotten a license from the NRC to start mining in Crown Point and Church Rock. But with the help of New Mexico Environmental Law Center and also with Shrick's assistance, we held the company back. Even though there was 12 issues that we challenged the NRC license to HRI, eventually all the everything was against NDOM and the community. But we still held back on them because we've also held them back on the land jurisdiction in the church, especially the Church Rock area, which checker boarded. We held them back because of the trespassing issues that were issued to HRI, because there was in order to get from the highway into their property, they had to cross about 50 feet of tribal trust land. And because of NDOM's persistent and NDOM's work against holding back the community, against the mining company, we've also worked with the elected officials in Winder Rock. We educated them because none of the community, the elected officials did not really know what uranium was all about and what it causes to our health. But with our educating them and talking with the elected officials, on November 4th of 2005, Dr. Joel Shirley, president of the United, of the Navajo Nation, signed into law the Natural Resource Protection Act, banning all kind of banning uranium mining on the Navajo Nation. And so, but with the Crump issue, after we found out there's a lot of contaminants that were left behind by UNC, especially practically all of the whole Redwater Pond community, we started educating the community members, and through that, I believe Redwater Pond formed in 2006. I'm looking at the community members. I'm not seeing them nodding yes or no. Everybody's just looking down. Did you guys form in 2006? 2007. And since then, Redwater Pond has also faced their own issues because of their with GE and UNC trying to decontaminate the area through different methods. Oh, that's a long minute. Okay, I'll wrap up right here. So that's Redwater Pond issue that there's some members here. I'm sure they will, you can probably talk to them. I just touched up on that, so you can probably talk to them later on. But with the mining company up in my behind my backyard, even though HRI moved out, they've sold their property to Laramine Resource LLC, who owns a mining, underground mining in Grants.
They haven't developed it yet, but yeah, the
Lajara Mesa. So 2017, last year to the present, that small piece of land in that canyon is private property and owned by Laramine. So we're still facing issues, and we need everybody's support, and also with the post 71 issue too, because a lot of the community members are former uranium workers, and we're I know a lot of them are facing health issues relating to being exposed to radioactive and underground. So I think I saw the sign 1 minute about five times already, so I'll just cut it off here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Thank you. Up next, we have Anna Rondon from the New Mexico Social Justice and Equity Institute. Anna's going to be talking a little bit about the health impact assessment that was conducted in Redwater Pond Road in Church Rock. I believe it began in 2011.
Yate, greetings. Sha'eya Anna Rondon Shia, Kiani Adona Kaidina Bushes Chin. And I'm so happy that the conservation's voter. That the Conservation's Voters of New Mexico Education Fund is hosting this meeting. We need to come back together. I know Mace and NDOM and Redwater Pond have been working on this issue many years, and they meet every month. Susan Gordon, who's with the Multicultural Alliance for Safe Environment, is keeping me and other folks around the state and around the country updated on the nuclear industry and their latest efforts to bring nuclear waste through our country, through the towns, through our highways and railways. So at all fronts, from the front end of the nuclear chain, uranium mining, to the waste, to the weapons, it's getting more serious. And I don't know if all of you had this copy I put out in the front, but what I wanted to talk about, and in terms of the health impact assessment, this is one of the results of the health impact assessment, is to have a moratorium with the McKinley community, the McKinley County, have an ordinance in place. So I really appreciate Talia Boyd and Molly Sanders for putting the resources into Gallup McKinley County. And this is one of the frontier rural communities, and this is one of the first times that a Santa Fe-based nonprofit is putting resources in this area, and it's really beneficial for us. So with the health impact assessment, of course, with the moratorium, but we also want to have a comprehensive health study. In the document, I put in there a snapshot of the social and environmental racism in terms of what happened at Three Mile Island, what my Che Larry talked about, in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And in comparison, that happened in March 28, 1979. And it was a reactor that had melted down. The governor of Pennsylvania immediately provided emergency resources to the families. But in doing more research on this, he was a really idiotic governor. The consultant for United Nuclear knew that there was a vulnerable design in the dam, how the dam was built. So the governor knew, state officials knew, United Nuclear knew, but they didn't do anything to prevent it. They weren't fined, they weren't told to upgrade the integrity of the dam. So there, it's these governors during this time, and the industry was still experimenting on the people of this country with nuclear industry. One thing in particular, they had an 18-year study. They had a cohort of 32,000 people in three counties right after the nuclear meltdown. So why didn't we get a study, a comprehensive study? This study was for 30 years initially, and the state, the company Three Mile Island, secretly paid a lot of the families that had deformed children, that had acquired where they couldn't function, they got paid off. And they signed a non-disclosure statement. Who does that sound like, Trump? But, you know, these other scientists, Dr. Ernest Sternglass and Jay Gould, they've been doing this work for thousands of years. These guys are pioneers for the truth in the nuclear industry. And they turned over the studies that were done by certain consulting teams that did the studies, but they were bought. They were bought and told that the studies are not indicating any type of relationship to the high rates of cancer, to the high rates of deformities, to the high rates of the children becoming disabled with learning disabilities. The animals in the area were becoming deformed. They couldn't walk. Dogs, cats being born with no eyes, no arms. Same as here with our livestock. So in comparison, today, like Larry said, what did we do here? Nothing. We didn't raise the voices enough. So in those times, I think if you compare from Church Rock area to the Ground Zero where the dam spill happened, all the way down to Arizona to our relatives, at least up to Winslow, there should be a comprehensive health study done. And I think bringing our congressional people together, maybe having another field hearing, because Three Mile Island, as of 2011, had 2,500 lawsuits against the company and against the state. So there's, don't give up. If Three Mile Island, after 30-something years of having, living with this contamination, if they're organizing, we can too. And I would suggest that we all make a united effort with Three Mile Island residents. There's a book that came out because of what happened to them, and it's called Killing Our Own. And that's from our federal government. That's telling it the truth about what this government is really doing to us. After the spill, nothing on the major networks, but with Three Mile Island, Walter Cronkite, ABC, NBC, it was huge. But in comparison to our waste, contaminated toxic soup, it was higher, more impactful to our people here than to what happened at Three Mile Island. It was a lower level radiation exposure to public health. But if the Three Mile Island folks haven't given up, I don't think the people here should give up either. We need to restart this fire. Restart it and start taking care of that fire in a better way, in terms of nuclear energy, in terms of our original teachings as a people. You know, we have many allies. I see allies in here. But I wanted to bring that comparative scope to you, that, you know, the environmental racism is what happened to our people. And how many have gone? Hundreds have died. Hundreds. I remember coming to the meetings with Shrek, with Ray Morgan and Austin Sam from the Prickle River Water Users Association. Along this whole Perky, from Fort Wingate down, people were organizing with Shrek. We need to bring that back even more. And I think this is, you know, having these meetings these past few years, these community forums, is very beneficial. And I also wanted to share with you, there are handouts back there about the health impact assessment. I did find another study, Psychological Effects of Technological Human-Caused Environmental Disasters, Examination of the Navajo and Uranium by Perry Charlie. Excellent, excellent. This is a component of a study besides our social and environmental health. Our psychological health needs to also be studied as well. I just wanted to share that with you real quickly, because I think we've been talking a lot, us organizations, but I really want to hear from the community people and have this open mic. So anyway, with that, thank you, everyone.
Yeah, thank you, Anna. Okay, so I'm going to dive in into some of the local work that we've been doing over the past 4 years as far as working on a county level. So back in 2011, when, or whatever year the HIA came out, it spurred a lot of conversations in our communities, right? We already had these conversations, but it reawoke this interest and this dialogue. And on top of that, we had another new proposed uranium mine in McKinley County, and that's the Roca Honda mine, and that's at the base of Mount Taylor. So this mine, it's in the advanced permitting process, advanced stages right now. And this, again, added to that dialogue of why our communities were really frustrated and also alarmed that our decision makers were opening the door again for the industry, right? And keeping the door open for them. We knew that we had already established working relationships with federal entities and state entities like the US EPA, the New Mexico Environment Department. And so our community people have those working relationships with them. What we were asking, well, through these conversations, our community people identified that a really great way of holding the industry accountable and having our decision makers stand up was pushing on our local decision makers on a county level. So with that, we introduced an ordinance back in November 2016. We took it to the county commission, and it was an ordinance asking for a temporary 3-year moratorium on uranium mining in McKinley County. It was a temporary moratorium, 3 years. This would give us space to have more conversations and really dig into what kind of impacts are really happening out here. Our commission got intimidated almost immediately, and they stepped away, and they decided not to go through with the ordinance. What they did instead, it was a series of craziness. One thing they did do is they violated the Open Meetings Act back in November of 2017 because we had a meeting scheduled with the county commission that was supposed to include community input, and it was scheduled for January 10th. At the last minute, the county commission pushed that meeting up to January 3rd. Didn't give us any kind of notification whatsoever to properly inform our community members. So when they did that, they violated the Open Meetings Act. Our community people were really upset. So what they did is they sent a letter to the commission with a letter of intent to sue. And with that, the commission set up a special meeting on March 14th of 2017. At that meeting, we packed the entire county commission room from wall to wall. Everybody who spoke at that commission meeting testified in support of a moratorium. And at this meeting, our commission, because they were intimidated by outside sources, they decided to promise us a blue ribbon task force instead. This task force would start assessing the impacts that our communities had been talking about for years and really dig into what kind of needs we need out here in McKinley County. If we're opening the doors for the industry, do we have plans in place if something happens, if another accident occurs? Is our community able and capable of responding to a radioactive catastrophe? Do we have plans set in place? Is our healthcare facilities in our community sufficient enough to, you know, deal with these kinds of things? These are the kinds of questions that our task force would be asking, right? And these are the kinds of questions that we were really wanting to have our community input on. So since then, the commission has been backpedaling. They basically told us that they never made this promise to us and that they don't really want to be a part of this process with the community. So since then, we've been pushing on them. We've been asking them to keep their promise. And this forum is a part of that conversation. It's an extension of that conversation. We want to keep the momentum up. We want to keep the conversations going. We want to hold our county commission accountable. You know, for far too long, our local decision makers have also kept the doors open for the industry, and it's about time we start holding them accountable, especially with everything that's happening on a federal level with the current administration and our environmental protections being gutted left and right. It's really up to the community people, and we have to lean on our local decision makers, and that's what we're trying to do now. And so, you know, we got power in people. These industries that we're fighting are multi-billion dollar industries. They have a lot of money, but we have people, and a lot of people in this room tonight have been working on these issues for a very long time. Some of them have been directly impacted. I hear stories out in the field, not very good ones. I get choked up when I, you know, start talking about it because it's so heartbreaking. I come from an impacted community. I'm originally from Tuba City area, which is a hot spot on Navajo for abandoned uranium mines. And then I moved here to Church Rock, and I found out this is where we had the largest radioactive spill in 1979 to this day. And nobody talks about it, you know, like everybody was mentioning earlier, the media had no national coverage here. We were kind of just tucked away in the corner and nobody talked about us. And to this day, we're still struggling with having our narrative as a part of the conversation. We want to see it at the table. And so this is really important to have our people here. But what we were talking about just now was opening the mic to our community people who have been doing this work for quite some time, because there's quite a few people in this room right now that have a lot of expertise and knowledge about all the moving pieces that are happening in this movement. And it is it's so many people working together to get things done, and it's not easy. And this work is not for the lighthearted. You know, you have to have thick skin. Uranium, nuclear issues are not an easy issue. It's a hard issue to talk about. It's very controversial, right? When we talk about nuclear energy, they're always talking about, oh, it's clean because it doesn't have any carbon emissions. But what they forget to talk about is the entire nuclear fuel chain, right? The cycle, as Anna mentioned earlier, the uranium mining is very carbon intensive because it requires, the heavy machinery that they use requires gas and oil. And then the transportation of these materials to these sites is also very carbon intensive. So when we talk about nuclear, we really got to think about every step of that process. And it's not clean. It's very much dirty. So that also needs to be a part of the conversation. So what I want to do now is open the mic up to some of the folks. And I'm gonna invite some people up just to get it started. And I had some conversations as people were coming in with some folks that have been doing some great work on the ground. So I want to invite up Sarah Adekai. She's been doing a lot of great work. She's been working with the Southwest Research and Information Center for quite some time. She has some updates on some of the work that she's been doing with SHRC. And I know the community is probably really interested in hearing some of that. So I'm going to hand the mic over to Sarah so she can give us a little update.
My name is Sarah Adekai. I'm originally from Pine Hill, New Mexico. It's a little community outside of the Rima, outside of the Navajo Nation. You have to go through the Zuni Reservation to get to us, and we're located in the west central part of New Mexico. But I had a lot of experience in working with Southwest Research and Information Center for the last. Since 2005 through 2011, there was a study that was conducted called the DNA Project, and it was a kidney health study. And we work with 20 communities out in Eastern Agency, and that's not all of the communities under the Eastern Agency. There's actually 32, but we chose 20 communities to work with. Some of those communities were right in the midst of the abandoned mines or the surface mining that has happened. So, which is, you know, along the corridor of I-40, you start off from Baca, Pruitt, all that area, Casamero Lake. We also did a lot of areas in the Crown Point area, and then down in here in the Church Rock, Northeast Church Rock area. There's a lot of exploration drilling that has happened too, and they are all over in Eastern Agency. So we were the team, the ground team that went out there and did all of the collection that was needed and required, and also the surveys of 1,200 people that we went through with these 20 chapters. So we had a variety of information that could pull a data, some data together to say, to let us know that there are contaminants. We did soil testing, we also did air monitoring. So a lot of that has now jump-started other research areas. You heard about the birth cohort, okay, that's one that continued because every community, when we did the report back, they would ask, "What about our future generation? What about them? Or what are we going to do about our environment? Where are we going to get the safe drinking water for them?" So it went on into the Birth Cohort Project, and I left the project because I learned so much about the contaminants to the kidney. I had my husband was diagnosed with renal kidney cancer. So I went home and with the knowledge that I had and was able to work with him to take care of himself so that he could continue to fight the cancer. So since 2005, and he was diagnosed to today. He's still with us, and that's a lot of it had to do with him understanding his own body, him having to understand that in our Navajo language, we have soothing words, we have healing words that we use. And just to talk about cancer, it's very, or culturally, we can get scared, you know, just to talk about cancer the way it's explained in our own language. But we talk about it, and he understands how that comes about. So as I work with Southwest Research, now I'm back with Southwest Research again to do some more community liaison work. I'm very familiar with the area and families out in Eastern Agency, especially the Redwater Pond area. Back in 2005, we had a lot of people living there. When I came back, I'm missing some people, and I asked about them. They had health problems at the time, and through their survey, they told us what kind of health problems they had. So they're not with us anymore, but I know that they were very concerned about their environment, why they were having problems with their health. And now we have the younger folks, all the ones that I've seen growing up and running around in the neighborhood there, are now able to talk about their environment and participate in a lot of the discussion. So it's amazing how much information has gone out and how much community education has happened since then. And the Redwater Pond Road Community Association was established at that time, and they're going strong. They're really seeking to find ways to continue to have a more healthier community. So this time around, we are, this is still in its very early stages of the study that's gonna be happening, and it's called zinc supplemental prevention. It's a prevention. Hopefully, we are able to tell if we work with some community people there in the Redwater Pound area, and that community splits up in four chapters: Church Rock, Pinedale, Coyote Canyon, and Standing Rock. So I'm, as a community liaison person, I'll be going out there to do a lot of community education. I do a lot of my education in my own language because I believe people that come to the meetings are the ones that are very concerned about their community and the well-being of their families. So it's usually the elders. And a lot of the younger folks still look up to the elders, and they want to know what they say and what their advice would be. So we are preparing this this project and finding a name for it and continue on to establish the basis of it being a full-fledged project, a full-fledged study that we're going to do. So right now, the UNM, we call it the Superfund project. They have been studying a lot of metals that are within tribal lands. So we have narrowed it down to where uranium and arsenic are the two metals that have had the most exposure to our people here. And not only here, this project's going to be applied. It's going to also go to Tachi community in the middle part of the Navajo Nation. So we will be working together to put this project out there. What it's going to do is we're going to take 20 people this summer. We're going to identify 20 people that we can that can volunteer to participate in this cohort study. The study will might it's going to take about 6 months in taking this zinc supplement. The zinc supplement, what it will do, hopefully, because it's never been done, and we can't promise that this is really going to work. We want to do the research so that if it will repair those damaged cells that has happened by exposure to the environment where there's been uranium mining, maybe taking in any of the water that's been there or just the air, and also just being in the environment, it can absorb through your skin too. So what we'll be working with is the two communities, two groups, 20 people first, 10 male and 10 female. The criteria to be eligible is that they must be between 21 and 45 years of age. And then also, they must not be pregnant or plan to get pregnant during the cohort study. Also, they must not be diagnosed to be a diabetic, because the medication that they're taking is not going to work with the zinc supplement. And also, during that time, they must also we will go through informed consent, so they will consent to giving some blood and urine at least three times through the time that they're in the study. And those will be analyzed to see if the zinc supplement is working to help their the DNA to become better in terms of blood counts, the cells that are damaged to repair itself through by taking the zinc supplement. So they're going to start with the lowest milligram, 5 milligram. That's what they'll be taking. So you can get zinc over the counter in any milligram, and it all depends. Some people take it during the time, like me right now. I'm just coming out from this real bad cold and being sick for several days. People take it when they start to feel down, and that's the only time they take it. But in this study, we're going to be kind of stabilizing their intake of their medication. They also will be asked to stop their multivitamins, but just to stick with the zinc. So we're going to be working with Redwater Pond Community Association, and with their recommendation of where to go and who to find, we're going to start with that. If we can't find enough volunteers, we're going to go even wider to the four chapters and see if we can get some other people that will volunteer. We've talked about it. There are people that grew up in and around the abandoned mines there, and now they have moved away and they're living elsewhere. They can also participate because they had that same exposure. Okay, so my time is up, and just wanted to let you all know this is up and coming.
Yeah, thank you, Sarah. I want to welcome Phil Harris up here to share some info that he's been working on. Phil has been working around, I'm sorry. Did I get your name wrong? Oh, dear. Tommy Reed, I'm sorry. Tommy Reed is here to share some info on RECA, the Radiation Exposure and Compensation Act. Tommy has been working on these issues for a really long time, and I believe he's also a former uranium worker. So Tommy is going to share his story here with us.
My name is Tommy Reed. I'm one of the group of 500 men who are currently registered as Post 71 workers out of the Navajo Uranium Office. But such as myself and others, there's other organizations not pushing off or anything. We've tried to, this is one that should be a concerted effort. It's mind-boggling where you show you have people that are out there who's in the midst of to have done the actual work. I have family members that were NIOSH studies. Their studies were put on by the government. And it's kind of difficult for me to, at times, to come before a crowd. But I manage, because we have a lot of friends that were advocating alongside us, like Anna made reference to. I've worked in the Church Rock mines, and also with that, there's three shifts going. You have United Nuclear, you have Kerr-McGee, and you have Mobil. All the mines were up, open and running. As far as Pinedale, close to the proximity of McKinley County, and also other mines in the Colorado areas. It's with a heavy heart I come before you tonight. We've been working on making it a little bit more to the point where, like, to help the workers themselves, try to seek out some compensation, and through that, an apology. We've been challenged to go before the Tribal Council in Windorong. And with that, time and time again, we had to justify to show cause why we should be sitting before them. We try to educate them as far as the ills of our health and our liberties for long life was been taken. They never told us what to expect in the uranium mines. Once got to have experienced it. We still live the nightmares as miners and workers. But let me go back to the part where, even going before our leaders, for the longest time, we stretched up over years. Like this past year, we went before the Tribal Council and tried to make them understand that we need to get lobbying efforts put together or get for them to work alongside us. But that hasn't happened. The reason why I state this is that about a month ago, we went before the Tribal Council. We put to them our concerns as former workers and the problems of health ailments that we have. But the thing is that they don't see it as we do, because we live it each day. We have friends who are on oxygen. We have friends that were still situated in nursing homes and the hospital environment. So we try to get their support for some lobbying efforts. But after much wrangling the last month, they gave us the okay, 18-0. That's how they voted in Windrock. Then came the big task of letting it go before our president of the Navajo Nation. But that's a totally different scenario. What happened next when the last like two and a half weeks ago, it was disheartening to families and such as a few of us that were been at this for a long time. He went ahead and line item veto. He said, it will be a waste of money to advocate on your behalf. He did not say this directly to us. But the other sad news, we're capable. We've seen and had to bury friends of ours. One we had to bury about a little over a week and a half ago. He was an 81-year-old gentleman. But mind it, Mr. President Begay, we're still here. We're stronger than ever. Of all the pains and ills that this uranium byproduct has, is going through our bodies, through our mind, and through the communities that are struggling with that, one's got to see it. I was wondering how I was going to put it before the community. That even there's struggles here in this area, city life, we're stretched on the reservation, it's not any different. We all, from this area, I've worked with a lot of men, a lot of ladies. Some ladies were pregnant at a time we were working with them. I was told not to speak of such safety or any things that were I saw where the ills, you know, where things we could better while we're working in the mines. You say, let's take your tools, whatever, you have to go. You can't be doing that. But I did it time and time again. But these are things that we had to step up into. There's others that came before us who are no longer here with us. Monday, I believe Monday at 2:30, they gave us a date and time to go back to the office of the president. I don't know what information they're going to relay to us. But so much the answers we've heard from them, I don't think anything can take away. I sure like to have a taste of that magic pill that's being suggested. But those are questions we put before people that were, they had the last words for us to continue advocating. As I look across the room, I'm sure you have families, loved ones, children. Just as such as you, we are rooted. The things and jobs we have to do at those times, we did it to earn a living, not only for ourselves but for our children. I'm a grandfather many times over. I'm at the age when my father passed. I'm in 60, around the area now, so. It's been some time when Jordan was the one. You know, he invited us at one time when we had to get together. I'm glad I have the opportunity to convey some of the concerns that I have as a former worker. I see some friends, co-workers that I used to work with in the room here. I don't know how else to speak of these things. It's with a heavy heart that I sometimes I go to the library
I try to make that communication to others. And there's friends that I've made throughout the years. Surely there's at some point one can understand our situation. As far as the land, I have deep concerns about that. And those are concerns that I conveyed to the EPA, to the people charged with the duties of looking further into these, like from Region 9, also from the Navajo Nation. There is millions and millions of water, gallons of water underground in Church Rock. They had to run the pumps 24/7. And the mines, the mini shafts that they've sunk, that's an indicator how the uranium was a rich grade. It was high grade. I worked 16 hours in that mine. I started right after high school. And there's 5 levels of inner workings. We're within so many hundred yards from each other, from the United Nuclear. These are things that we try to educate the community. These are things that we try to get people to understand. That it's affected a lot of individuals there. And those are things that we're ready to give the answers from where we stand. There's a long list. Some I can't pronounce as far as what's on my medical summary, my face sheet. But I live life day at a time. And it's good to see faces that are up to the and have the energy to move this along. I traveled with Anna way back in 1997. We hopped on a plane, we flew to and met with the federal agencies. We told them, we gave them a mouthful, earful, from the area of Spokane, Washington. People that came on the plane with all the regalia, the feathers, buckskin. There was like a chief that came on the plane. Little that we know, there is this people such as us. They have a heart, and they have a mind, a body, and soul. There's a song in each one of you, and there's things that compel us to do things. You know, the inner spirit that tells you what you need to do. Those are some of the teachings that I was given. My grandfather lived to be 105 years old. I never forgot where I'm coming from and who I've come across, the paths I've crossed with many friends that we lost along the way. These are tears that we shed before our leaders, our communities. But yet, you give us strength to come to the podium. That's our calling. So don't stop. I appreciate the time that's allotted to me. As far as the leadership, we'll know by Monday what they decide. But it's something that we surely will find out. But I'm thankful to each one of you who are here today. And you have many things that you to take back home, whether it be by literature or by experience, whether it be this your first meeting, there are others. And I thank you. Maybe put that on paper. I appreciate you being here. We need all their help, maybe even put that question to the Navajo Nation president, this administration, why they won't help us. And there's a meeting, several meetings coming up with the EPA. I got invited to one in, I think it's closer to the end of this month, in the Cove area. It's by the newly formed, what, the Uranium Commission. They asked me to do a presentation. I feel that this is not, in a way, that it's not just only for myself, but for you. It will be an open invitation for you to listen. Whether you be from Gallup, you can go to Cove or Grants. Those are open areas, so I appreciate the time that you've given me again. I don't want to go ahead and take too much of your time, so, man, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Tommy. This is, this work isn't for the lighthearted. This is, I hear so many stories. It's really, it's a lot. It's a lot. But thank you to everybody, to all our warriors here who are doing the work, who are out there fighting the good fight. Keep doing it, because we need you. We all need you. And we need to bring in the next generation of younger people. We do need to organize. It's all about community organizing and educating and sharing what we know. So, you know, a lot of people ask me, well, what can I do? I don't know what to do. And I tell them, you know, go home, talk to your friends, talk to your family, start this dialogue in your own home, and just educate as many people as you can. Because like we said, you know, the Church Rock spill is still quite unknown to this day. People still don't talk about it enough. And that's, you know, that's a good conversation to have with folks that come, that are new to our community, that aren't familiar with the history that and the people in the land here. You know, there's a lot of history here. For Indigenous people, you know, we have sacred sites. And these extractive industries that have been coming in have been desecrating our sacred sites for a very long time. When these companies do that, it takes away the power from our sacred sites. It takes away the integrity. It compromises its healing power. And that, in return, has a direct impact on the psyche of Indigenous people, because this is our land. We know where the sacred sites are on this land. We know how to yield the power from the land to heal ourselves. So, and in that way, you know, when our land is destroyed, it destroys us. You know, medicine people have brought this to my attention time and time again when I'm out in the field, and them saying, like, well, you know, this is why we have a lot of disparities in our communities. This is why we have domestic violence, we have alcoholism, we have substance abuse. It's because our sacred sites are losing that power. Our sacred sites are being desecrated almost on a daily basis. And so we're losing that power to heal ourselves. And so for Indigenous people, we're fighting for survival. We're literally fighting for survival when we're fighting these multi-billion dollar companies. But everybody is. I mean, anything nuclear, the half-life of radioactive material is 4.5 billion years, you know. And they say they can put the water back to pre-mining conditions. It's never been done. It's never been done. It's like mixing creamer and coffee and trying to extract the cream from the coffee. It's ridiculous. You know, they say they have new mining methods and new technology, safer technology. A lot of that stuff is still very faulty. And, you know, the promise of jobs. Well, this new technology, you know, takes away that manual labor that they required in the past when it came to open pit mines or underground mines, right? All this new technology is what's replacing the labor, the workforce that came in back in the day. So there's a lot of things that we need to talk about. You know, the fact that there's no permanent repository anywhere in the world for nuclear waste. Nobody wants this stuff in their backyard. We sure don't, but we've been living with it for quite some time. So these are conversations that we want our local decision makers to really start talking about and being a part of this conversation. You know, we aren't the only nuclear sacrifice state in this country. There's several. You know, our Western Shoshone ancestors near Yucca Mountain in Nevada, that's their sacred mountain. That's been a nuclear test site for for quite a while too. So their whole community has been displaced. Their sacred sites have been desecrated. We could talk about the Hanford site up in Washington, D.C., near the Yucatan, I believe is what it is, or Yakima Nation. They're also impacted by the Hanford site, which is, And then, you know, we could talk Chernobyl, Fukushima. You know, there's quite, it goes around the world. Australia is the number one provider of uranium worldwide. The Aboriginal people in Australia have been completely displaced. Their sacred sites have been desecrated as well. You know, so we've been saying, like, no nuclear from Four Corners to Fukushima. Enough is enough. We need to stop this nonsense. You know, the nuclear reactors that are all on the East Coast that require tons of water. Uranium mining requires tons of water. All this water that they're sucking up, and they're just contaminating it. We're getting stuck with nothing. I think 90% of New Mexicans depend on groundwater for drinking water. So it's important that we keep this conversation going and that we start pushing on our local decision makers for health studies, right? For water studies, soil studies. When uranium decays, it turns into a gas, radon gas. And once it gets buried in your lungs, it's there, and that's what causes lung cancer. A lot of our former uranium miners have lung cancer. And the industry was like, oh, well, these guys used to smoke, like, every day, right? But they did a study on Navajo miners specifically, because back then, and traditionally, we just weren't big smokers, right? Our people weren't big smokers. And so they did a study on a group of Navajo miners that didn't smoke, and still outrageous numbers of lung cancer. So that argument that, you know, they got it from smoking is absolutely bogus. They knew damn well what kind of detrimental impacts were going to happen when they brought the uranium mining in without telling us how it was going to impact our health, how it was going to impact our livelihood, the boom and bust of the mining company, right? It's good when the jobs are here, but once it's gone, our people are displaced. We don't have anything left. So we're also asking on our decision makers to start thinking about long-term sustainable economic development, right? We need to shift away from all this dirty energy and really start talking about clean stuff, solar, wind. We have options. You know, everybody in the community has also been talking a lot about food justice, food sovereignty. How can we have that if we have contaminated water and contaminated soil, right? So all of these issues are very much intertwined. Social justice, economic justice, economic justice, right? So we very much need to have all of these conversations at the same time because they very much impact each other. And we can't be working in silos, right? So this is another challenge for the movement, is the fact that these movements of injustices have just been working in these silos. So we really need to come together and start having these hard conversations with our decision makers. So I kind of want to leave the mic open for anybody in the audience who has been doing some of the work as far as uranium mining, doing community outreach, organizing. And I just want to point out, at that special meeting on March 14th with the county commissioners, we did have a healthcare professional from Gallup Indian Medical Center come down and testify at that meeting. And he has been in the community for 30 to 40 years. And at that time, he stated that he has seen a large number of a very rare kidney cancer or kidney disease. He says it's very prevalent in this area, but it's also very rare in other places, right? So he said that he had a PowerPoint that he put on the CDC website. You know, these are the kinds of folks that we really want to start having these conversations with, professionals in the community that are seeing these signs, because again, we don't have any health studies. Our work altogether, collectively, we're trying to create a health state baseline so that our decision makers know exactly how we're being impacted. This health impact assessment was just the beginning of that, right? The Church Rock Health Impact Assessment. We want that to kick it off and make that dialogue even bigger. We want to pull in our decision makers and make them accountable, make them stand up and listen. So I just want to leave the mic open for some folks who might be interested in sharing. If anybody feels compelled to come up and speak a little bit about the work you've been doing in the community. Also, I want to do, thank you for reminding me, I want to do a door prize real quick. So, I'm going to go around really fast, or if I can have somebody help me and take this around and have somebody pick out a number. Or Danielle or Molly, can I have one of you come up? And so she's going to pass it around. We have four prizes. So we'll just have four people pick. Four people pick four different numbers. Oh, and we have a Q&A question. Some space. If people have questions, we passed out little 3x5 cards earlier. If you have questions for any of the panelists that were up here this evening, please write down your question on that card, and we're going to collect them here in a minute, and then we can share some of your questions with our panelists and hopefully get some of them answered.
So people can just come over here.
Cool, perfect. Oh, I'm so glad you guys are here. I would have been struggling with this. Okay. All right, I don't know what's happening. And just a shout out to New Mexico Social Justice and Equity Institute. They bought the door prizes. They brought the door prizes. Okay, first number, 843. 843. It is Carl Cole Basin. Woo! Carl, you got a beautiful Rocky Mountain tumbler. Keeps drinks cold up to 24 hours.
And just a note, KGLP is recording this. We're going to post the full audio on our podcast page on kglp.org, but we'll also excerpt for broadcast probably next Friday during the noon hour.
And KGLP is 91.7 FM. KNIZ is 90.1. That's the old radio station I used to work for. Let's see, Carl. Woo, okay. Number 831, Brian Wilson. Yay! Brian, you won a beautiful indoor outdoor 20 LED utility lantern. Aren't you going to pay? All right, we have number 822, Sarah, woo! Sarah, you got an awesome little sewing kit. Oh, okay, thank you. All right, last number, we have 832. Aaron Lorenzo, 832, woo! And
we have a wonderful box of chocolates. Okay, we're done. No more door prizes. But we are having the floor open for Q&A, so if anybody has any questions that they'd like to put on the table, we would be more than happy to answer those right now. So I guess raise your hand if you have a question, and then I'll have Molly or Danielle come and pick up your card. All right, Tony. Or you could come up and ask your question if you want.
Yeah, come up so everybody can hear you. Like me?
You'll be famous. Famous on KGLP.
Yat, eh? Good evening. Kitle cheating is known on this Esbus's chin. Also, this is Chidokia and the Chanel. Alo, Tutso Nisha, Chinidat, eh? Northeast Church Rock didn't have a English name. We call it Kachites Ahidas Dika. Since the Jinia is 2 days in the Dahalia. So our elders teach us how to introduce ourselves. We honor mom and dad, grandma and grandpa from both sides, paternal and maternal. And then you also honor Mother Earth. That's just what I did. We have holy places too, where we live, where the sun hits the mesas at sunrise, the initial lights. We have spruce coves, Chobhlandasla. Then we have Tsekho, rock canyons. And Tohadasa, natural spring waters. Those are all holy places. And when the mining company came, they desecrated all those areas. Anyway, I have a question. Why can't we use the Tronox bankruptcy settlements for studies and relocation for people that live near the area? I work for a GIMC as a driver interpreter, public health nursing. And for many years, we used to fill out PCCs, patient care components. And in those forms, the provider is supposed to provide information, who, what, where, when, why. And for the longest time, I used to stress that, ask the patients if they were exposed to uranium mining or they live near the proximity of a mine. And from all our visits, I think the whole Rio Perco down that way should be tested, all the people. So why can't we use that settlement to do studies like that? I was a uranium miner for 11 years, and pretty soon I'm gonna look like Shrek.
Thank you, Tony. So I don't have the answer to that question, unfortunately, but I know we have a ton of local experts in here, so I don't know if anybody can answer that for Tony. Can anybody answer? So Navajo, we got a settlement. It's called the Tronox settlement. It was for, I believe it was for $4.5 billion, and it was supposed to go towards remediation on Navajo. And as you guys all heard earlier, we have thousands of abandoned uranium mines on Navajo Nation. I believe the Tronox settlement was only supposed to cover like 40 of those mines to clean up. Or Kerr-McGee mines, yeah. So I can't really, I don't know, I'm not really up to date on that. So if anybody else in the room can speak on that, Okay, but Tony, we can definitely keep that question, and I will dig for some answers, and I will get back to you. Yep, and that's what Tommy was talking about earlier. So the Uranium Commission on Navajo would be a great commission for us to ask about that. And Tommy, you said the next meeting's on Tuesday next week? In Cove, okay, at the end of the month. Okay. So yeah, I mean, if folks are interested, I'm ready. I can take some folks down there, and we can talk to some of our Navajo Council delegates. We could talk to the Uranium Commission, and we can ask them and get some real answers about the Tronic settlement. Because, you know, unfortunately, our tribal officials are very, they're not very good communicators, to say the least. But so we have, even within our own communities, trying to reach out to our tribal leadership is hard, and connecting with them and getting some straight answers from them. So it's a challenge, I understand, but we will definitely try to get an answer for you, Tony. The Tronic settlement is definitely... Go ahead, Sunny. Or you want to come up and ask? Yeah.
I guess what I want to say is the Navajo Nation eastern portion of the reservation does not have a uranium commissioner on the newly established commission. They're actually looking for someone. So any one of you who is interested, I met two of them. One was named Nona, I think. I can't remember what her last name was. Yeah, Nona Bahajoni and Perry Charlie, or Charlie Perry, are the two commissioners that I met at Sweetwater when... I don't really know the ins and outs, but all I know is Eastern Navajo Agency does not have a uranium commissioner. And then I just saw a huge disconnect between... the trustees that are appointed by, I guess, the Navajo Nation government for phase one and phase two. And phase one's trustee is Sadie Hosky, and phase two's trustee is Derrideth Watchman Moore. And those two entity trustees don't seem to be communicating very well on the huge amount of information and money that seems to be in the form of a settlement for Navajo's 523 uranium mines that are being addressed by different kinds of settlements. So this is a really good opportunity for everyone, Navajo and non-Navajo, to sort of put weight onto the Navajo Nation EPA office, because there was one individual from that office that came to Sweetwater named Lily Lane, and all she talked about was her sheep herding days. And there was no really solid information. So I believe the Navajo Nation EPA director is named Dr. Ben. I don't know his first name. But when you really put heat to the feet there, he just blames everybody. And so this, we can no longer blame anybody. And if he needs to be educated, there's at least 60 people in here that can help him get a grip on what it is he's supposed to be doing. And I think that everybody is now transparent, okay? You just have to Google somebody and you know what they're affiliated with, or you can Facebook anybody, and if the Russians don't have your information, well, your cousin down the road already knows. So in that regard, I think that we can take a real good example from all those young people in Florida who lost 17 of their beloved student body. And they're just calling it like it is. And I think that's our turn. You know, it is our turn to just really start talking about this, because I was a student In 1979, I remember the Church Rock spill going through Gallup. And there was a Nda Inimiwe ceremony down in Lupton. And I told my mother, I said, if that water down the Rio Perco gets down to Lupton by second night, I said, those sheep are going to be glowing. And that was from just high school information on radioactivity. And our grandma who lived down there, her name was Asan Yaje. And so she said, and so we went down to Lupton, and the Inimiwe ceremony brings two unrelated clans together. On Sunday, there's about 500 people. And so I told in the best possible way what radioactivity does to people, and she just had no concept about the, what was it, 4.5 billion half-life. That doesn't translate into Navajo. And so San Yeji just turned to us and she said, where do we get the meat? And so we brought meat from Vanderwagen down to over there, like, you know, 14 head of sheep. And we said, all those sheep that are in that corral can't be eaten. So at that dot ceremony, that was one, you know, not quite altogether science gal, because I just sort of like, you know, slept through science, but I'm like, radioactivity, I know what that is, you know. You know, just the little pieces of knowledge that we have, we know it's very destructive. So Eastern Navajo Agency needs a uranium commissioner. Navajo Nation EPA office needs some good education. And then because the Navajo Nation EPA is uninformed, Mr. Reed, that's the why our president has no idea about what's going on. And that you see, that's where we really need to educate. And I don't know if anybody has the money or the resources to get public service announcements out, but I think that would be something that is needed and necessary to get the word out about, we can't let this happen again. And it's happening again because Grand Canyon is still mining uranium, and on, you know, really messed up roads, they're hauling it over to White Mesa, right on the outskirts of Blanding, Utah, and they're storing it there. So we're doing this so it does not happen in anybody's yard, anywhere in the world.
Yeah, thank you, Sunny. Thank you, everybody who came up and shared. It's not easy getting up in front of a room full of people and sharing a really personal, very sensitive story, right? Thank you to everybody who came to tonight. I'm so happy. I've been having forums for the past 3 years, and every time it gets a little bigger. So super happy that everybody made time on a Friday evening to be here. Thank you. Well, it's 8 o'clock now, so I think we're gonna call it a wrap. But please, if you have any questions, go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. I'm a former uranium mine worker too. I worked at Church Rock Kermit Key for 8 years, and this is what it did to me. And everything we did, nobody told us nothing how effective it can get. And what you guys have talked about, is anybody a representative of any kind of a community, or maybe the tribal government, or any kind of a, you know, a lawyer or something here in the area that we have? Or yeah. Where are we taking this thing in resources? I'm just coming back from Albuquerque having my checkup. I got a bad lung disease from this kind of a work that we have done. I'd just like to share a little bit of my health and my friends. One day I was working, I had a good job. It just snuck up on me just like that. And I ended up in the hospital for 3 months and I couldn't work no more. Now it's getting to the point where I can't breathe and I'm on 5 liters now. And I'm waiting for a lung transplant. I'm just waiting for how much more are we gonna wait for something like this? I wonder how many of my people is gonna die off of this. There was a person, my friend, a good friend of mine. I told him how it can be affected to him. I said, get yourself checked. Get a CT scan. Get some kind of an X-ray, because this thing will sneak up on you. He kind of laughed it off. 2 months later, it got to him and he died. I'll tell you, half of the people that I worked with, they're gone for the same reason. We're talking about water too, the sacred water, what we use, we drink every day. Our animal used to drink it. We used to drink it. There's a lot of whales down this way. I'll tell you where she's standing, about half of that, the stand, two of them. That amount of water was coming out of the underground. That's a lot of water that they have brought it out to the surface with all the high reading of radiation. And it wasn't only that. When the time at the end of their work, the company itself has no sympathy about nobody. We today, what we have brought up, we're saving the world. I'm a Vietnam vet, and I've seen a lot of these things. We're still saving the country with it, but yet we're the guinea pig. Yes. We did this thing, we brought something out, and we're still dying off of it. Why? The company itself, too, at the end, they started picking on people. They started, clocking in. 1 minute late, you're out. You're fired. How could a company do this to us? We're very vulnerable people here. How can they do such a thing? I didn't know that the job was collapsing. I didn't know the job was going to be over. At the end of the one day, we just went to work. I'm sorry, there's no job. We had a lot of our stuff, our possessions, still down there where we have worked. We never recovered any of those things. And it went on. A lot of people wasn't prepared for it. I was so lucky that I had a stock plan with it. I came out even. I paid off my ride. I paid off my house. I had $700 left. It was school time. I bought my kids some clothes. I was even out. A lot of my fellow workers wasn't even prepared for it. You know what happened? Here comes repossess their vehicles, their house, their family got broken up. This is the only job they know. They drink themselves to death, some of them. They actually did. This is the what kind of a poison they put on again on us. Where are we? Is there anybody here that can help us or that can listen to us and take it to somewhere next level? I just want to know. Even I would appreciate it too if they can take care of my health bill. The company, the uranium, whatever the product, or whatever the resources they got. They need to cover these people. Maybe we can start off with something like that. They haven't given us nothing back. Why? You wonder why? And they still want us to, you know, develop something here again. This is not fair. I like to share these things with you all. And I feel, I'm pretty sure all of you knows, you know, a little bit about this, and everybody has, you know, thinking about something of where we can get together and maybe, you know, take it to the next level. Where is our local government that we vote for? The Gallup area, where are they? This is not a community. Where are half of the people that vote for them? Where's the Navajo tribe? What kind of money do we got to give them to come into our meeting like this, for them to understand? Where are they? Why do we vote for them? We're the poor people here trying to get, you know, get somebody to listen. I just like to share this thing with all of you, and thank you, everybody, for coming out and listening to something like this, and I sure appreciate it. Thank you all. Have a safe trip home. God bless you all.
Yeah. That was very powerful. Thank you for sharing that. Everything that you spoke about was a part of the dialogue this evening. As far as local efforts, we've been working for the past 4 years with communities like the Redwater Pond Road Community Association, where the spill happened back in 79. We also have representatives from the Eastern Navajo Diné Against Uranium Mining, and they're from the Crown Point community that have also, I'm sorry, and Church Rock. Crown Point and Church Rock and Dom Covers. So there's, and Tommy, do you want to come up and say something real quick?
What I can say, I'll speak up in the
room. Okay.
I'll go ahead and just communicate some information to the party here. But on ha khalan ha to nisto khale ya ina ado to na hon hido liton khe ay tain kha yos na lon khayat ki
those
are the kind of people that I made reference to, that it's a waste of money and time. They made reference to us at the Navajo Nation level, our leaders level. These are our stories. There's so many chapters in our book, Inside Our Hearts. And our families, they can relate to it, to that. But I want to invite him to go along with us to Wonder Rock Monday. I don't call veterans and any not kids, kid, and not a hot option that she mentioned later. Just like in his case, he's a Vietnam vet. I had many friends that were highly decorated veterans. Some were in the Air Force, some were Navy, all branches. So they did two tours, more than two tours. It has to come from him. Let's say that, looking at me, I told you about the situation where some words we can't pronounce is what's in our summary as far as our health goes and our medical records as such. But this is something that's happened time and time again. And where is the time where we they going to start listening? I'll be
My
name is Tom.
I had my dad work there, two of my brother worked there. My mom used to do the laundry for us. I mean, this is a nasty stuff that we had, you know.